The Truth About Huma Abedin That Media Matters Doesn't Want America to See. By Lee Stranahan on January 18, 2016. Still don't believe Media Matters functions as a propaganda machine to aid and abet Hillary Clinton's political aspirations? Just read its response to a Vanity Fair article titled "Is Huma Abedin Hillary Clinton's Secret Weapon or Her Next Big Problem?" The left-wing attack machine wasted no time in posting an article with false information and smears in order to protect the Clinton campaign. Hillary Clinton has stated publicly that she helped start and support Media Matters, and that organization has consistently come to Clinton's aid with a consistent campaign of misinformation, half-truths and smears of her critics that can then get repeated by the mainstream media. The Vanity Fair article must have sent shockwaves through the Clinton camp. It's rare to read mainstream press criticism of Huma Abedin. Instead, mainstream adoration for Huma by the media is often so over the top that even other outlets are forced to say something. For example, after Abedin's husband, disgraced former New York Congressman Anthony Weiner, was once again caught sexting with other women as he ran for mayor of New York City, New York Magazine published a piece so gushing that it led The Atlantic to write an article titled "New York Magazine Has a Crush on Huma Abedin." New Republic chimed in and said that Abedin always gets good press, but this piece takes it to a new level and cited this description of Huma as an example of New York's silliest/creepiest Huma Abedin descriptions. She wore bright red lipstick, which gave her lips a 3D look. Her brown eyes were pools of empathy evolved through a thousand generations of what was good and decent in the history of the human race. Despite the fawning coverage she has received, there are many unanswered questions about Abedin, especially given her complete access to Hillary Clinton, one of the most powerful people in the world, a former Secretary of State and possible future president. As Vanity Fair's William Cohen writes in his piece, over the years Huma has served in several positions, with increasingly important-sounding titles. She has been Hillary's body woman, her traveling chief of staff, a senior advisor, and a deputy chief of staff when Hillary was Secretary of State. Now, based in Brooklyn, she is the vice chair of Hillary's 2016 presidential campaign. The facts about Huma Abedin and Abdullah Omar Nassif. To his credit, Cohen's Vanity Fair piece on the secret of Abedin confirms a number of facts that have been reported by conservative media for a couple of years but have been twisted and convoluted by the mainstream media. When Huma Abedin was 2 years old, the family moved to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where, with the backing of Abdullah Omar Nassif, then the president of King Abdulaziz University, her father founded the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs, a think tank, and became the first editor of its Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs, which stated its mission as shedding light on minority Muslim communities around the world in the hope of securing the legitimate rights of these communities. It turns out the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs is an Abedin family business. Huma was an assistant editor there between 1996 and 2008. Her brother, Hassan, 45, is a book review editor at the journal and was a fellow at the Oxford Center for Islamic Studies, where Nassif is chairman of the board of trustees. Huma's sister, Hiba, 26, is an assistant editor at the journal. Not one statement is actually controversial because they can all be confirmed by simple research that refers to primary sources. In other words, you don't need to reference conservative media in any way to determine the truth about the Abedin family and their connections to Abdullah Omar Nassif. As the masthead of this 1996 issue of the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs shows, Huma Abedin was an assistant editor at Journal. Down the masthead you can see the name of Abdullah Omar Nassif. Because of the smear tactics used by Media Matters and repeated by the mainstream media, this point cannot be stressed enough. This is a primary source showing Abedin was an assistant editor of the journal. It's not a right-wing theory, a conservative fever dream, Islamophobia nonsense or anti-Muslim fear-mongering. It's a fact, a cold hard fact shown on the journal's masthead at the site where the journal itself publishes. Because it's such it's an easily verified fact, it should not be a significant breakthrough that the mainstream publication Vanity Fair published the truth about Huma Abedin's clear and indisputable connection to the journal and Nassif. It is a breakthrough, however, and that's precisely why Media Matters for America immediately went to work trying to obscure the facts, telling its readers, which include many journalists, that claiming Huma Abedin has connections to alleged Arab funders is a spiderweb of guilt by association. Although Cohen brought the facts about Abedin to light for the first time in a mainstream media article, he failed to flesh out some of the key background of Abdullah Omar Nassif. Again, please note that we can point out these facts about Abdullah Omar Nassif without linking to a single conservative media source. We are only going to link to primary sources and widely respected left-leaning media like CNN and the New York Times. In his early years as the patron of the Abedin's Journal, Nassif was the Secretary General of the Muslim World League, which Andrew McCarthy, the former assistant U.S. attorney who prosecuted the blind sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, in the wake of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, claims has long been the Muslim Brotherhood's principal vehicle for the international propagation of Islamic supremacist ideology. Although it describes itself a non-government organization, the Muslim World League is effectively an arm of the Saudi Arabian government. As a lawsuit posted on the Philadelphia Inquirer website states, a full-time employee of the Muslim World League testified as follows. "Let me tell you one thing, the Muslim World League, which is the mother of IRO, International Islamic Relief Organization, is a fully government-funded organization. In other words, I work for the government of Saudi Arabia. I am an employee of that government. Second, the IRO is the relief branch of that organization, which means that we are controlled in all of our activities and plans by the government of Saudi Arabia. Keep that in mind, please. I am paid by my organization, which is funded by the Saudi government, the IRO office, like any other office in the world. Here in the Muslim World League, has to abide by the policy of the government of Saudi Arabia. If anybody deviates from that, he would be fired. He would not work at all with IRO or with the Muslim World League." According to the group's own website, the Muslim World League is engaged in propagating the religion of Islam, elucidating its principles and tenets, refuting suspicious and false allegations made against the religion. The League also strives to persuade people to abide by the commandments of their Lord, and to keep away from prohibited deeds. The League is also ready to help Muslims solve problems facing them anywhere in the world, and carry out their projects in the sphere of Dawah, education and culture. The League, which employs all means that are not at variance with the Sharia, Islamic law, to further its aims, is well known for rejecting all acts of violence and promoting dialogue with the people of other cultures. The group's claim about rejecting all acts of violence is specious given its connection to the Saudi government and the kingdom's advocacy for Sharia law, which it practices with gusto. Following 9/11, the Saudis came under intense government scrutiny for their role in funding terror through ostensibly charitable groups. In 2007, ABC News reported Saudis still filling al-Qaeda's coffers. Despite 6 years of promises, U.S. officials say Saudi Arabia continues to look the other way at wealthy individuals identified as sending millions of dollars to al-Qaeda. "If I could somehow snap my fingers and cut off the funding from one country, it would be Saudi Arabia," Stuart Levy, the undersecretary of the Treasury in charge of tracking terror financing, told ABC News. The mainstream media has done nothing to seriously vet the connection between the Clinton and Saudi Arabia. And the key role Huma Abedin plays in the life and work of Hillary Clinton are one core link. Abedin not only lived in Saudi Arabia from the time she was 2 years old, but her mother currently lives in Saudi Arabia and runs the Journal for Muslim Minority Affairs, as well as being a dean at a women's college there. Further tying the Clintons to the Saudis is big money. CNN reported in 2008 that donations to the William J. Clinton Foundation include amounts of $10 million to $25 million from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Vanity Fair points out Huma's ties there after Clinton left her role as Secretary of State. In addition to the State Department and tenure jobs, Huma was hired as a consultant to the William J. Clinton Foundation to help plan for Hillary's post-state philanthropic activities, and as a personal employee of Hillary's. The Saudis have denied the accusation they funded terrorism and also say they complied with U.S. orders, telling ABC that after the September 11 attacks, the country took prompt action and required Saudi banks to identify and freeze all assets relating to terrorist suspects and entities per the list issued by the United States government. One of the organizations specifically singled out for funding terrorism was founded by the Abedin family benefactor. In 1988, Nazif also founded the charitable giving arm of the Muslim World League, an entity called Rabida Trust. Remember the league's connection to the Saudis as stated earlier, and it's clear that Nazif was not a loose cannon but effectively acting as an employee of the kingdom. One of the other founders of the Rabida Trust was Wael Hamza Julaydin, who that same year would also become one of the four founders of Al-Qaeda. In 1984, Julaydin had worked with Osama bin Laden to set up Mujahideen training camps in Afghanistan, as U.S. News reported in 2003. Shortly after the 9/11 attacks, the government froze the assets of the Rabida Trust for funding terrorism, as the New York Times reported in October 2001. The Bush administration vowed today to seize the assets of more individuals it says support terrorism, including a prominent businessman from Saudi Arabia, a United States ally whose reluctance to move against people and groups with ties to Osama bin Laden has become politically sensitive. Also on the list is Rabida Trust, a Pakistani charity that at least until recently had Pakistan's president, General Pervez Musharraf, on its board. Administration officials said they warned President Musharraf of the impending order against the Rabida Trust and encouraged him to disassociate himself from what they described as its founder's links to Al-Qaeda, Mr. bin Laden's terrorist network. In March 2002, federal law enforcement officials conducted raids on 15 organizations that the Treasury Department suspected of laundering money, the New York Times reported. One other place searched today was the office of the International Islamic Relief Organization at 360 South Washington Street in Falls Church, Virginia, another Washington suburb. That charity has a parent, the Muslim World League, that officials said was also searched. Corporate records show that the Muslim World League, which is financed in part by the Saudi government, is based at the same address as the relief organization in Falls Church, but that it has used the Herndon building as a mailing address. Last October, the Treasury Department listed another Islamic charity financed by the Muslim World League, the Rabida Trust, as having connections to Al-Qaeda. The connection of Abdullah Omar Nassif to terror funding in general and Al-Qaeda specifically is clear and convincing, just as clear and persuading as his connection to the Abedin family is. The Muslim World League was the mother organization of two groups the government believed were involved in funneling money to terrorists, the Rabida Trust and the International Islamic Relief Organization, IIRO. Both groups are listed on the Treasury Department's website. Both Nazif's co-founder Wael Hamza Julaydin himself and the Rabida Trust as an organization were placed by lists of terror funders by both the United States and the United Nations. The Treasury Department met cited the Rabida Trust for providing logistical and financial support to Al-Qaeda. The Treasury Department's discussion of the IRO goes into detail about the money and logistics support they provided terror groups and includes information that shows that these provide both legitimate charity services but also act as a money laundering operation to get funds to terror groups. International Islamic Relief Organization, IIRO. Abd al-Hamid Suleiman al-Mujil, al-Mujil, is the executive director of the IRO Eastern Province, IRO EP, branch office in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Al-Mujil has been called the million-dollar man for supporting Islamic militant groups. Al-Mujil provided donor funds directly to Al-Qaeda and is identified as a major fundraiser for the Abu Sayyaf Group, ASG, and Jamaa Islamiya, G. The IRO PHL is a source of funding for the Al-Qaeda-affiliated ASG. IRO PHL has served as a liaison for the ASG with other Islamic extremist groups. A former ASG member in the Philippines familiar with IRO operations in the country reported that a limited amount of foreign IRO funding goes to legitimate projects and the rest is directed to terrorist operations. The IRO Indonesia director has channeled money to two Indonesia-based, G-affiliated foundations. Information from 2006 shows that IRO IDN supports G by providing assistance with recruitment, transportation, logistics, and safe havens. As of late 2002, IRO IDN allegedly financed the establishment of training facilities for use by Al-Qaeda associates. Vanity Fair did publish some other elements of the close connections between the Abedin family, Nazif and groups with terror funding designation. Writing about Abedin's father and mother, Cohen writes that in 1993, his wife succeeded him as director of the institute and editor of the journal, positions she still holds. She has also been active in the International Islamic Council for Dawah and Relief, which is now headed by Nassif and was banned in Israel on account of its ties to the Union of Good, a pro-Hamas fundraising network, run by Yusuf al-Qardawi. After some solid initial work in the article, Power Cohen suddenly gives readers the impression that Nassif's connection to terror funding might possibly be a sketchy, tenuous affair that's still up for debate, pushed by right-wing screeds. The article doesn't even mention the Arrow or the Rabbit Trust despite Nassif's clear connections and both groups' designations. Instead, the Vanity Fair article says, Google Abdullah Omar Nassif, the man who set up the abettance in Jeddah, and a host of right-wing screeds pop up. Though he is a high-ranking insider in the Saudi government and sits on the King's Shura Council, there are claims that Nassif once had ties to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, a charge that he has denied through a spokesman. Again, if you're skeptical about these claims, just click on any of the above links. There's not a right-wing screed in the bunch. Everything about Abedin and Nassif can be proven through primary and left-leaning mainstream media sources. Media Matters went on the attack against Vanity Fair, anyway. And why not? The mainstream media had already proven that it wouldn't report any of this material as it related to Huma Abedin in 2012. Anatomy of a smear campaign. The Protect Huma smears have 6 elements. Never mention that Huma Abedin was an assistant editor at the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs for over a decade. Simply leave that fact out of your reporting and assume your audience won't do the research themselves. Never mention Abdullah Omar Nassif's clear connections to terror funding, as supported by both the U.S. government and reporting in sources non-right-wing sources like the New York Times. Write the whole thing off as a convoluted, completely unsubstantiated conspiracy theory. Because the audience does not know Huma worked at the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs or about Nassif's terror funding ties, with no clear connection to Huma Abedin at all. Call it a conservative fantasy. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy since nobody else in the mainstream media will report the facts. So the facts are only being reported by conservative media. Point to the lack of MSM coverage as proof that the whole thing is a right-wing chimera. Exaggerate the claims of the critics. Tell your audience that Huma is being accused of being a spy when in fact what critics are pointing out is that there are clear connections and gaps in the record that raise troubling questions about Huma Abedin that should be answered. If you make the claims seem outrageous, you can distract from the actual facts. Point to Huma Abedin's Republican defenders such as Senator John McCain or Senator Marco Rubio as proof that even Republicans don't think questions should be raised about Huma Abedin. Once again, this conveniently avoids the actual facts. The new Media Matters article uses every one of these tactics. It doesn't acknowledge that Huma Abedin was an assistant editor at the Journal or explain Abdullah Omar Nassif's connection to terror funding. Media Matters begins its attack on Vanity Fair and Cohen by saying, Cohen chose to introduce Abedin to the magazine's readers by regurgitating a series of right-wing attacks that have previously been widely covered or discredited by other journalists, including the ridiculous and offensive question of whether she might have ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Media Matters closes the section discussing Vanity Fair's treatment of Abedin's associations. Although Cohen describes some of the allegations as right-wing hysteria and provides quotes from Senator John McCain, Oz, and the Clinton campaign denouncing the attacks, Cohen takes no position on the claims. The way these deceptive tactics have played out in the media is important to understand, because it gives a clear indication of what is in store for the 2016 election. Republican presidential contenders and their consultants would do well to study how the media not only failed to vet Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin, but actually covering up the facts and attacked people for pointing them out. The 6 smear tactics outlined above were also used in the summer of 2012 when a handful of Republican representatives including Louis Gummert and Michelle Bachmann began asking questions about Abedin. If you want to be clear on why Andrew Breitbart said, the media is the enemy, take the time to see what people who don't read conservative media were being told about Huma Abedin during the last election cycle. For a prime example, watch Anderson Cooper's explanation on his CNN show AC360 in 2012 talking about the connection between Huma Abedin and Abdullah Omar Nassif. He takes over a minute to explain what he calls a conspiracy and never once mentions that Huma was the assistant editor of the Journal for Muslim Minority Affairs for 12 years. Here's liberal radio host Sam Seder in 2012 describing the relationship using hand gestures behind the back of his head to indicate just how crazy it is to think that Huma Abedin has a connection to Nazif, but again, no mention that Huma worked at the Journal. The Atlantic also published a piece in 2012 called The Convoluted Connections That Link Huma Abedin to the Muslim Brotherhood, complete with a wacky chart that looks like it was drawn by a crazy person. You'll note that the chart makes no mention of the Rabida Trust, either. That article begins. The spectacle of right-wingers like Michelle Bachmann throwing around accusations that State Department Deputy Chief Huma Abedin is a secret agent of the Muslim Brotherhood has been remarkably information-free. So we decided to trace the most ardent supporter's case for radical Islamic infiltration of the U.S. government. The results are a tangled, convoluted mess. Huma Abedin must be vetted. The Vanity Fair article may be the first crack that breaks the mainstream media's protective shell around Hillary Clinton's top aide. The case for raising questions about Huma Abedin is compelling but needs to be laid out in a methodical, fully documented and factually accurate way that will stand up to the inevitable defense mechanism of the mainstream media and Democrat machine. It's not just the media that needs to be held accountable. It's the entire Democratic machine as well as Republicans who defended Huma, including John McCain and Marco Rubio. I asked Representative Keith Ellison about the factual points about Abedin in 2012 on Twitter. Democrats often tout Ellison as a brave pioneer, the first Muslim elected to Congress. At Keith Ellison, who is listed as the assistant editor for the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs here. Lee Stranahan, at Stranahan, November 9, 2012. Congressman Ellison then blocked me. Follow Breitbart News lead investigative reporter and Citizen Journalism School founder Lee Stranahan on Twitter at @Stranahan.